Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya.
So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, title of canto 1, chapter 17. Title of the chapter is Punishment and Reward of Kali. And we have this section from text 28 to text 32. So we'll chant the last verse responsively, and I'll chant the other ones up to that point. Iti dharmam mahinchaiva Okay. You know, I sometimes teach teaching. And we do this exercise, which I won't tell you what it is because maybe someday you'll be in my class and then I'll spoil it for you. But there is evidence that people don't listen when instructions are given. And that's what just happened. So, Tatshrinu. It's not just Krishna House. It's the planet during Kali Yuga. Okay, one more time. We'll read the first verses. I'll read the first verses, and at the end together we'll do text 32. Got it? Okay. Iti dharmam mahinchaiva san. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said if you want to remember something, you have to say it three times. I'm not going to say it the third time. Sanfayitva maharataha. Nishatam adate katkam kalaye dharma hetave. Maharaj Parikit, who could fight 1,000 enemies single-handedly, thus pacified the personality of religion and the earth. Then he took up his sharp sword to kill the personality of Kali, who is the cause of all irreligion. I'm going to read the purport. As described above, the personality of Kali is he who deliberately commits all kinds of sinful acts which are forbidden in the revealed scripture. This age of Kali will certainly be full of all activities of Kali, but this does not mean that the leaders of society, the executive heads, the learned and intelligent men, or above all the devotees of the Lord, should sit down tightly and become callous to the reactions of the age of Kali. In the rainy season, certainly, there will be profuse rainfalls, but that does not mean that men should not take means to protect themselves from rains. It is the duty of the executive head of state and others to take all necessary actions against the activities of Kali or the persons influenced by the age of Kali. And Maharaj Parikit is the ideal executive head of the state, for at once he was ready to kill the personality of Kali with his sharp sword. The administrators should not simply pass resolutions for anti-corruptional steps, but they must be ready with sharp swords to kill persons creating corruptions from the angle of vision of the recognized Shastra. The administrators cannot prevent corrupt activities by allowing wine shops. They must at once close all shops of intoxicating drugs and wine and force punishment, even by death, for those who indulge in habits of intoxication of all descriptions. Heavy stuff. That is the way of stopping the activities of Kali as exhibited herein by Maharaj Parikit, the Maharata. Text 29. Tvam shighang su sam sum abhipretya vihaya nripalanchanam tadparamulam shirasha samagadbhaya vivala. When the personality of Kali understood that the king was willing to kill him, he at once abandoned the dress of a king and, under pressure of fear, completely surrendered to him, bowing his head. Next verse, 30. Patitam padayor vira kripaya dinavatsala sharanyo navadichchlokya aha chedam hasan iva.
Maharaj Parikshit, who was qualified to accept surrender and worthy of being sung in history, did not kill the poor surrendered and fallen Kali, but smiled compassionately, for he was kind to the poor. Text 31.
Nate guda kesha yashodaranam badhanjalirvai bayam ashtikinchit Navartitavyam bhavata katanchana kshetre madhye tvam adharma bandhu.
The king thus said, "You have inherited the fame of Arjuna. Therefore, since you have surrendered yourself with folded hands, you need not fear for your life. But you cannot remain in my kingdom, for you are a friend of irreligion." And together, text 32.
Tvam...
I'll chant, you chant.
Tvam vartmananam naradeva dehesh. Anuparito yamadharma poga. Lobho nritam charyamanar yamangso angho. Jesta chamaya kalahas chadamba.
Somebody else chant.
Tvam vartmananam naradeva dehesh. Anupravito yamadharma puga. Lobho nritam charyam anaryam ho. Jeshtha cha maya kalahas cha dambha. Tvam vartamanam naradeva dehesh. Anupramato yamadharma puga. Lobha nritam charyam anaryam amho. Jesta cha maya kalahas cha dambha. Tvam dartamanam naradeva dehesh. Anupravrittam yoradharma puga. Lobho nritam charyam anaryam amho. Jaista cha maya kalahas cha dambha.
Tvam. Sorry.
Tvam.
You.
Vartamanam.
While present.
Naradeva.
A man god or a king.
Deheshu,
in the body.
Anupravrita,
taking place everywhere.
Ayam,
all these.
Adharma,
irreligious principles.
Puga,
in the masses.
Lobha,
greed.
Anritam,
falsity.
Charyam,
robbery.
Anaryam,
incivility.
Angha,
treachery.
Jyestha,
misfortune.
Cha,
and.
Maya,
cheating.
Kalaha,
quarrel.
Cha,
and.
Dambha,
vanity. If the personality of Kali, irreligion, is allowed to act as a man-god or an executive head, certainly irreligious principles like greed, falsehood, robbery, incivility, treachery, misfortune, cheating, quarrel, and vanity will abound. Want to read? Somebody over here?
Robert. The principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, as we have already discussed, may be followed by the follower of any faith. There is no need to turn from Hindu to Mohammedan, to Christian or some other faith and thus become a renegade and not follow the principles of religion. The Bhagavatam religion urges following the principles of religion. The principles of religion are not the dogmas or regulative principles of a certain faith. Such regulative principles may be different in terms of the time and place concerned. One has to see whether the aims of religion have been achieved. Sticking to the dogmas and formulas without attaining the real principles is no good. A secular state may be impartial to any type of faith, but the state cannot be indifferent to the principles of religion as above mentioned. But in the age of Kali, the executive heads of state will be indifferent to such religious principles. And therefore, under their patronage, the opponents of religious principles such as greed, falsehood, cheating and pilfery will naturally follow. And so there will be no meaning to propaganda crying to stop corruption in the state.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gaurani Pichane Nibhisesa Chini Medipas Chachare Sutane Mukham Karati Vachalam Pangam Langayate Gurim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Shri Guru Dhinatanam Padamananda Arvanam Shri Chaitanya Mishwaram.
So I had these two purports read because I thought both of them kind of highlighted the essence of these, the points that Prabhupada is making in these two verses, or in these few verses. And my assigned topic, one more time, is justice and compassion, or justice versus compassion, perhaps. That may not be accurate. So it's interesting here, and I think we all know the story, but if not, I'll bring us up to date, that Maharaj Parikit heard that there was evidence that Kali Yuga, or the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the symptoms of that age, which are described here, especially in the last verse and purport, were starting to crop up in his kingdom. And he just heard rumors about it. Prior to that, there was no evidence of Kali in his kingdom. His kingdom was devoid of those negative qualities that were described. But then he started to hear rumors that these things were happening. So he immediately took up his bow and arrow, and he went out to find out what was going on and take care of it. Because he was responsible for the citizens, like a father. This is a very interesting point to be made in Niti Shastra, the situation of rulers in general. We see that in Vedic times, the king was more than just an elected representative who made a lot of money and stayed in office for as long as he could and then, you know, took as much out of the country as he possibly could before he had to leave. But rather, he considered the residents of the country, and in this case the whole world, he considered them his children. And he considered it his dharma, or his great responsibility, to see that they were taken care of. And we'll discuss a little bit more about what that means in a little while. But that was the weight he carried on his shoulders. Now in the last verse that we read, who remembers what the king was being called? There was another word. What? Man-God. Now that's an interesting terminology, isn't it? I don't think we could call Bush a man-God. Certainly not Bush, not even Obama, not anybody, even not Abraham Lincoln or any of these people. Because actually the king, I was reading this morning in the Mahabharata that the way, because in such a yuga and other yugas, especially such a yuga, there was no need for a ruler. And gradually, as the qualities of the human being deteriorate to deteriorate as we progress towards Kali Yuga. Different aspects of Dharma Shastra, or the maintenance of the society, had to be brought into play. So eventually punishment came into play and rulership came into play. And Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seeing the need for a good king, said, okay, I will infuse the power of spiritual leadership into the king, and that was Prithu Maharaj. So Prithu Maharaj, he was infused with the power of kingly rule by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. That's what's called the Shaktivesh avatar. And his assignment or his purpose was not only to clean up the mess of Venu, who was his predecessor and was not a very good ruler, but also to establish a standard of rulership, to establish a standard of godly leadership. So Prithu Maharaj set that standard, and he was, in fact, a man infused with the quality of God, and by God himself. And so that kind of became the label of monarchs, Rajarshis we call them. Rajarshis means a ruler, a Raj, a king, who has the quality of a Rishi, who's focused on God, who's focused on bringing the people back into a godly consciousness. And Parikshit Maharaj came in a long line of such godly rulers, and he was determined to uphold that qualification, which he had inherited from his father, or his grandfather, Arjuna. And so he took it very seriously that the people's welfare was in his hands. He wasn't out to get things from them, but he was out to take care of them. That was his mission. That was the purpose of his life. And so he went out with a bow and arrow thinking somebody is trying to harm my kingdom by infiltrating it with negative qualities, with values that are counterproductive to a godly life. And therefore, I have to do something about it. That's my responsibility. So he went out to find out what was going on, and he ran into Dharma in the form of a bull. And Dharma was suffering. He had lost three legs. He was miserable. And the cow and the bull were there, Mother Earth and Dharma were there, and they were both very disturbed. And Maharaj Parikshit was very disturbed to see them, because in his kingdom, never before had a cow or a bull been disturbed or mistreated or harassed or violently assaulted. And here they were, both of them, lamenting with feeling very unhappy. Dharma wasn't lamenting, but he was suffering. Bhumi was lamenting. So he immediately decided that he had to find out who had perpetrated this terrible act against these two harmless personalities. And he ran across the Kali, the personality of Kali. And Kali, as was described in the first purport that I read today, was dressed as a king. He was impersonating a godly person, a godly ruler. But in fact, he wasn't. And in fact, he was motivated by his own selfish desires, as is quite common in Kali Yuga. Look around. Most people are motivated by selfish desire. Pretty much everybody who doesn't know that they're a spiritual being is motivated by selfish desire. Because we can't help it. We're looking out for number one. And even if we're looking out for number two and three, it's only because it will reflect some benefit on number one ultimately. So we may expand our consideration that we want to help our family or we want to help our country. But as soon as it gets the R part, the our, O-U-R part goes away, then we're not so interested over there if it doesn't affect us somehow. So Parikshit wasn't like that, and Kali was very, very much like that. So Parikit saw him and immediately went to kill him. And this is where we're coming into the story in these verses. He saw that he had committed a violent act. He was the person who was responsible for it, and therefore he deserved to be punished. But Kali, when he saw Maharaj Parikit in that angry mood, prepared to take immediate action, he immediately showed his true colors. And Prabhupada explains in this purport that a true ruler will never walk away from a conflict. He'll take action no matter, even if he has to give up his own life. And there are so many stories in the Bhagavatam, not only in terms of fighting, but in terms of making sacrifices, sacrifices of their wealth, sacrifices even of their own flesh, as Ranti Dev did. So many different, he's willing to sacrifice anything to take care of his people. Arjuna, when the Brahmin came and complained, well, how is your brother, Yudhisthira, a good ruler, if in fact my children are dying before their father? This is an unnatural thing, that a child dies before the father. Something is wrong in the kingdom. Because they understood that the overt actions or the overt things, the signs in a kingdom, reflected the karmic reaction of what was going on in the kingdom. So he said, the kids are dying before me. They're being born and they're dying immediately. It must be because something is wrong in the kingdom. Your brother, Yudhisthira, he's supposed to be the ruler here, and I want justice. So Arjuna was faced with a dilemma because he couldn't go in. There was some agreement between him and his brothers that was when one of them was with Draupadi, no one would enter the room. Yudhisthira was there. But then he had to weigh, okay, what's more important, the welfare of the people? I'm willing to sacrifice. I'll go into exile, because that was the deal, right? You broke in for, and then you had to go in exile for a year. So he said, okay, I'm willing. I'll go into exile for a year. But I have to do what I have to do in order to protect the people. And he went in and got his weapons. So many stories like that, many, many times, we see that great people make sacrifices for the welfare of others. And Parikit Maharaj was smiling, it's described, but not smiling in a happy sort of way, smiling in a way where he was realizing that this person was actually a very cowardly, low-class person. He wasn't really the person he was dressed to be. He was impersonating that person. And as soon as he was put in a situation where his life was in danger, his true colors came out, and he was a punk. Right? He was a punk. He was a scaredy cat. And not only was he a scaredy cat, but he was begging for his own life now. Now he had appeared so big. He had taken violent action on this dharma, the bull and the cow. But now when he was faced with a worthy opponent, he wasn't willing to fight. He just graveled on the ground. So Maharaj Parikit wouldn't fight with him then because he wasn't a worthy opponent. So he said, okay. So you've surrendered to me. Now you're worthy of some compensation because you're a surrendered soul. So I can't kill you because you surrendered. So I will let you go. And then Kali said, well, where will I go? I need a place to live. You're the ruler here, and you need to give me a place to live. So Parikit said, okay, well, you can live wherever there's gambling, intoxication, meat eating, and illicit sex. And then Kali wasn't satisfied with that. He said, well, you're telling me I can go live in those places, but in your kingdom, there's none of those places. I can't find those kind of activities in your kingdom. Your kingdom is free of those activities. And so you're telling me I can live there, but in a way you're tricking me because there's no place like that. So really you're sending me away. And so he said, okay, I'll give you a fifth place. And the fifth place I'll give you is wherever gold is being hoarded. Wherever money or wealth is being hoarded, you could stay there. And so Kali was satisfied with that. Now, Parikit's intention was to minimize the effect of Kali, to keep him from infiltrating in his kingdom. But in the long run, he wasn't successful. He was successful within his reign, and Janmanjaya did a fairly good job in the next dynasty. But gradually, Kali spread his influence. And we can see in the material world now that because people are so greedy, people are so covetous of material stuff, that Kali has managed to establish places of meeting, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling, not only institutionalize them, but also within the hearts of every living entity, pretty much, in this age of Kali, there's some inclination towards envy, greed, all these qualities that are described here in text 32. Greed, falsehood, robbery, incivility, treachery, misfortune, cheating, quarrel, and vanity will abound. So previews of the coming attractions. So now we're living it. Here it is. It's all over the place. And even when you try to avoid it, it's not so easy. So then we're asked to look here at the difference between compassion and justice, because we have people in the material world who are in the position of leaders. Remember that story I told, not last class, but the class before, about the harbingers of the age of Kali and the fact that the elephant got through the hole, but his tail got caught. Who remembers what that means? Joy? Well, the people who are in small positions, they get caught. The people who are in big positions get away with murder, literally. So that's one of the signs of Kali. And the other sign that was referencing the government was the walls, remember? I put a wall around my garden. The wall used to protect my garden, but now the wall is starting to encroach upon my garden. And what was the meaning? Who remembers? They're actually robbing them and exploiting them. So these are just some of the symptoms of the age of Kali. And we have this dilemma, or this apparent dilemma, for justice and compassion. We're asked to be compassionate. Lord Chaitanya is Mahavadanaya. He's the most compassionate person, the most compassionate avatar. He's there not to kill people, but to kill the qualities of Kali Yuga in their hearts. And that's our mission, right? Our mission is to somehow or other help people, like Prabhupada says in this wonderful purport in text 32, that it doesn't matter what religion you are, the rituals are not important. What's important is the principles of religion, that we develop good qualities. And the good qualities only come when we live in a godlike way or a godly way. And so however we live in a godly way, if we're putting God in the center, that means we're not putting our own personal desires in the center, which allows us to be truly compassionate. And then justice, because there is need for justice. People who are doing things, especially to harm others, have to be contained. They have to be stopped. And this is another responsibility. So how do we balance these two things? It's a bit of a dilemma. I was looking at the dictionary definition of compassion, the word compassion, a feeling of deep sympathy and sorrow for another who is stricken by misfortune, accompanied by a strong desire to alleviate the suffering. So if we look at that definition and we feel sympathy and sorrow to another who is stricken by misfortune, what's the greatest misfortune? Lack of God consciousness. Fact that someone will have to take birth, probably a lower birth, the fact that someone will go on in repeated samsara, birth and death, over and over and over again. The fact that someone is not aware of the karmic reaction to his behavior, so he goes around doing whatever he feels like he wants to, and not even what he feels like, but what his senses and mind feel like. So because his senses and mind are compelling him to behave in ways that are harmful, harmful to himself and harmful to the planet and harmful to other living entities, then our compassionate nature tells us this needs to be changed. Something needs to be done about it. So we should get our bows and arrows. If I did, I wouldn't be able to hit the side of a barn anyway, so it wouldn't really make any difference, right? But we should get the Sangopangastra, the weapon of the holy name, because the weapon of the holy name is the utmost compassion, in that it changes the heart of the living entity, and it cheto dharpa namarjanam, it cleans the heart of all these negative qualities and allows the living entity to be able to see things differently, to be able to be motivated by different care or different concerns. And then we look at justice, and I wanted to talk a little bit about justice, because there's a lot of different kinds of justice. There's utilitarian justice, and there we have, it says, justified by the ability to achieve future social benefits resulting in crime reduction, and the moral worth of an action is determined by its outcome. So we judge a thing by its result. And then there's retributive justice. Regulates proportionate response to crime proven by lawful evidence. So we go to court, we figure out if you're guilty or innocent, and then we try to punish you commensurate with the crime that you've committed. And we try and weigh it out. So sometimes we think of it maybe, the definition they give here is almost like karma. It says life for life, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. That apparently is the motto of military justice, stripe for stripe. So that sounds like karma almost, right? That eye for eye, tooth for tooth. If you do something, somebody else will do the thing back to you. And then there's another one, restorative justice, where is concerned not so much with retribution and punishment, but with making the victim whole and reintegrating the offender into society. So then we try to get the two parties together. We try and find out what the real problem is, get to the fix it so that the person doesn't do it again and that he could be a member of society. And distributive justice is directed at the proper allocation of things like wealth and power. Make sure you get your fair share of something and no one cheats you out of your part. So justice can be looked at in many different ways. So how do we look at justice in a spiritual sense, in a Krishna conscious sense, as devotees? How do we look at justice? I'll let this take place first. Go. So we consider that justice and compassion, are they really different? Do they have anything to do with each other? How do they fit together? Or do they fit together? What do you think? Yeah. Okay, so justice can be compassionate, and the example you give is the epitome of apparently being harsh, in that someone has the karma, or someone will get very bad karma for taking another person's life. And so if the state kills him, if he's killed for that crime, then the karma is mitigated. Actually, Manusmita says that all his karma is mitigated. It's like being killed on the battlefield. If you're killed on the battlefield fighting in a battle that's a worthy cause, then your karma is mitigated because you're doing the proper thing. So if your life is taken because you took the life of another, and your life is taken after by the government, or by the people who are meting out justice, then you're freed from that karma. So in some way that's compassionate, because the karmic reactions would be worse and more long-lasting, actually, because they go on life after life. Any other thoughts on the relationship between justice and compassion? Yes.
Real compassion is ministering justice, because that way, like you said, you're getting rid of your sinful reactions, and you gain realization when you're taught the correct way, or when you're disciplined in the correct way, you actually learn.
Okay, so justice can be and take the form of discipline, and it can actually teach us how to behave properly, and then again, another form of compassion, or can be done compassionately, even though it may appear to the person, just like if you take a child, and the child runs across the street. So that's dangerous. If he continues to run across the street, he might get hit by a car. So the parent, in an attempt to train him, may administer some punishment. And the child may not understand. He may get angry that he's being punished. He can't go out, or he has to sit in the corner for 10, 15 minutes or whatever. But if he learns not to go out in the street anymore, then that punishment is compassionate. Right? It's compassionate to teach that child not to run out in the street. And when the child is older, he'll get it. He'll understand. And in many cases, that's the case. Olivia? It can mean that, yes. We're discussing here, because of the situation here, that Kali had, Maharaj Parikit, he had to make a decision, right? He saw this person who had perpetrated an act of violence in his kingdom, and he had to balance compassion and justice. So if he was too compassionate, then Kali would just go about doing his stuff, and that wouldn't work. Right, and we sometimes see that people just, I know you're really a nice person down in your heart, and let's all be friends, and you'll be good, right? Yes, I'll be good. Okay, and so then off you go, and again to do the same thing. On the other hand, we also see that if he would have killed him or killed some people or tried to wipe out everybody that was not behaving properly, that might have had also negative reactions. We have so many people in prisons who are treated, in a confinement or a punishment type way, and they don't get reformed. They just go out and do the same thing again. So there's both things there. And then there's another level of justice where we just justly give, distribute something. Yes. But I don't think Olivia's quite finished. I saw another sentence.
I was just thinking about how, as devotees, it's our duty to be compassionate and to give everyone an opportunity in Krishna consciousness and distribute the holy name and the knowledge and everything. But then, we're instructed when it comes to atheists, people who are very inimical, we should avoid. So I was just thinking, that kind of is that's the justice that they're getting, because they've been so sinful, now they're not getting the ultimate, compassion, the ultimate gift, the goal of human life,
Avoid them and give them a cookie.
Yeah, so I guess they will still get some, but I think
but that's to some extent that's our level. Because we're not in a position to administer justice, except within our own community, right? Within our own community, if somebody that we're compassionate to, for instance, we invite someone into our community, and we give them the holy name, and we give them lots of cookies, and they're just showered with affection, and then they steal from us, or they hurt the deities, or they hurt a devotee, they hurt a child. Then there comes a question, okay? There's compassion. We want to be nice, but we were nice and we were compassionate. And then this person misused that compassion and acted in a way which might require justice. Now, you or me, we may not be in a position to administer that justice. But whoever's in the administrative position has to figure out how to So do it.
I guess then it'd be like Krishna is always administering the justice because Krishna gives you whatever you want. So if you want Maya, if you want to be covered over, then he covers you over and he doesn't let you, you know, advance spiritually like that. Mm-hmm. So
on one level, Krishna is the ultimate justice giver. But he has Yamaraj working for him. And Yamaraj dispenses justice on a lower level, on a more practical level. Hmm? And in our area, like Parikit Maharaj, he was the king of an area, in this case the earth planet, he was the king. He had a responsibility to administer justice. Yudhisthira also had the responsibility to administer justice. Sometimes we see, like, there's many stories, and this was Arjuna's problem also. Because Krishna wanted him to fight, and Arjuna thought, well, you know, we should just be nice, they're our relatives, and, you know, so what if they raped our wife, so what if they burnt down our house, so what if they tried to kill our family, so what, it's not worth it. I would rather just go out into the forest and Krishna will take care of it. Oh, you're Krishna. I forgot about that. But you can take care of it. And why do I have to take care of it? These people are my relatives. And he didn't feel impelled to administer justice. But Krishna said to him, it's your job. And if you don't do your job, then other people won't do their job and the whole society will fall apart. Everybody has their responsibility. We, as, you know, members of the Krishna house or relatively insignificant specks of spirit souls on the planet who are trying to give out Krishna consciousness and Krishna lunch, we don't have a justice retribution factor in our lives except within our local community. But somebody is supposed to. And the problem is because there's no standard of justice, then no matter what you do, someone is going to complain about it, right? Just like we look at abortion and we think abortion, people who commit abortion, or certainly people who advocate abortion, they will get justice through the law of karma. Some people feel they should get justice in other ways because it's murder, and some people think that's the perfectly thing to do, and the people who are complaining about it should, you know, be censured, because there's no absolute standard. So we have to follow an absolute standard. I wanted to hear from Estefania for a minute, and then Joe.
I was wondering, so Maharaj Pariksit didn't kill Kali because of compassion, what you're just explaining now, like trying to balance, but the effects of Kali still infiltrated mm-hmm. into like, the rest of society. So, couldn't that be seen as a lack of compassion to the rest of people? Like, how do you see like the greater picture? You know, because of that action, then Kali like just infiltrated everywhere, and then everybody else is suffering so much more because of
well,
that.
Well, I knew that question was going to be answered, so I asked. So I thought about it a lot before I came here. Jai, Hari Bol. So, One understanding is that ultimately, for each of us, we have to make a choice to be influenced by Kali or not. Because Kali Yuga is meant to be. The four ages are not stoppable. They have to happen. So Kali Yuga is meant to be. And Maharaj Pariksit knew that. There was no question of stopping the coming of the age of Kali. He gave him a place which we can choose not to go to, right? We can choose not to go to, and we do choose not to go to places of meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. And if we choose to go to those places, if we choose to participate in that activities, then the effect of Kali on us is guaranteed, but we have a choice to avoid them. And so, and even the hoarding of gold, Srila Prabhupada in this chapter, makes it clear that gold, or, you know, in this case, money, gold is the standard of money, material wealth has to be handled very carefully. If it isn't handled with spiritual power, with spiritual advancement, it can also pull you down very easily. I've seen it even with devotees. As soon as you get money, then your surrender, the way you look at the world, starts to change, and you can be very easily influenced. That's why, you know, Jesus Christ said it's more difficult for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God than to thread a camel through the eye of a needle. Because our vision becomes distorted when we put on glasses that have dollar signs in them. And so even putting Kali in that place, we have a choice. So in some ways, in order to, it can't be prevented. Like the sages of Namasharani at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, they were Brahmins. So they were sages. So they had to deal with the fact that Kali was coming. Parikshit dealt with it in a different way because he was a ruler. But the Brahmins, they were sages. So what they did was they started to perform a sacrifice, try to mitigate the influence of the age of Kali. Krishna also gave us various ways to mitigate the age of Kali by appearing as the holy name, by appearing as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by appearing as the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he gave us light in the dark, in the otherwise darkened age of Kali. So everybody tries to help us out, but no one can do it for us. We have to do it. Joe.
There are a couple thoughts that have come to my mind about this with justice. Cool. Usually justice is always in reference to jurisdiction. And, you know, we might have the desire sometimes to see justice. On another note, thinking of another point, is a snake handler and how they approach not getting bit by the snake. And some people, they might have so many different methods, but a snake handler knows to go straight for the head, pin the head down. And this way, they're completely safe if they just grip there, regardless of what the rest of the body is doing. So the chief point of justice on an individual level is to know whom things belong to and act accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing this in the light of ourselves, Maharaj Parikshit, he had the kingdom that he was in jurisdiction of. But we have a jurisdiction of a kingdom similarly, the kingdom of the nine gates of our body, the senses. And they tend to roam around and do so many things and think, oh, this is for my enjoyment. So in one sense, we can become, within the jurisdiction of our body, administer justice. Now, wait a minute. This doesn't belong to this, me, or this, or this, or this. We can administrate our senses to offer the things to the master of the senses, Shikena Hrishikesha. So I was just thinking that if we do have the desire to do this, to be administrators, to see things wrong, that we can, this kingdom, it may seem like a small kingdom, you know, relatively speaking, but when we're being bombarded by the urges of the senses, we can see how there's complete chaos, anarchy going on in our kingdom. In our own little kingdom, we have anarchy going on.
Actually, that whole Paranjana story very much elaborates on that particular analogy, that the body is the kingdom and that, you know, the soul within is supposed to be the ruler of that kingdom. Very often it's not the ruler of the kingdom, and then you have the mind being the ruler of the kingdom and the senses being the ruler of the kingdom, because the senses are the advisors of the mind, and when they get overly powerful, just like you see in a corrupt kingdom where the ministers are giving bad advice to the king and the king is listening to that bad advice, then you have a corrupt kingdom. And so Paranjana had a corrupt kingdom because he was, you know, he was waylaid by his senses, and specifically by his attachment to his own, you know, the wealth and health of his body. So that's a very good analogy. And for us, it goes beyond that, actually, because we have the responsibility of our own body first, and then we have the compassionate responsibility to help other bodies realize that they're not that body. Because other people aren't aware of what you just said. Many people aren't aware of that responsibility that they have to offer justice to their own body. And so then they commit sinful activities or crimes, not only against their own body, but against other bodies, against everybody. And so we can administer compassionate justice to everybody else by helping them to become strong enough to discipline themselves, to become strong rulers of their own kingdom. And that's a big responsibility. Prabhupada gives an example. It's very interesting. He talks about a man who was a very wealthy person. It's a person he knows. And he said he sees a prostitute in the street and he thinks, it's cold out. This woman is suffering. Let me give her $2 and go home, or 2 rupees and go home. I have to chant the Sarira prayers in 1 second. But Haridas Thakur, when he saw a prostitute, he gave her the chanting of the holy name, and he changed her into something else. He changed her into a woman who could understand the goal of human life, instead of just thinking she was the body and that she had to sell her body in order to be happy. So the difference between a devotee or a person who administers justice with transcendental vision and compassion with transcendental vision, both of them have to be administered with an understanding of who we are and what is the goal of our life. And I'm going to chant the prayer.